This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, number 106. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
Or you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliff.
And I'm Berners.
It's another packed show this week. We've got interviews galore coming up on the show. So welcome along, Berners. You looking forward to hearing the wise words of some interviewees this week?
Absolutely. Got a few old favourites who are rearing their pre-season heads. So elementary, dear Watson.
That's right. Gary Palmer is on the show telling us more ABCs of batting. So that'll be interesting. And we have a new feature this week. We're talking to the president of Edinburgh-based club Watsonians, who are in the running this season for trying to win the Scottish National Premier League. And we've adopted the club for the season. So throughout the summer, we're going to be profiling the club, letting you know how they get on, analysing their performance, talking to the key players. And we're starting all that off with a bit of backroom stuff with Ross Brooks, who is the president of the club and a very hard working amateur president. Does a lot of work in his spare time for the club, and a lot of cricket clubs have people like Ross, don't they? I'm sure at your club, Berners, there's a select few who give up a lot of time to make sure the club runs smoothly.
There certainly are. A lot of clubs in England thrive on that. This for years, I'd imagine every club I've ever been involved in has as many of these guys as possible. They're often thrust into action around this time of the year, clearing leaves and getting sight screens out, getting nets up and all the rest of it, because that's the amateur game, I guess.
Yeah, there's never enough of them. They're always complaining that they're always doing everything, and it's always the same faces that you see every year helping out, and the same faces that you don't see until the start of the cricket season when they turn up on Saturday, just before the start of play. But I think that's the way it will always be in amateur cricket. You know, people don't necessarily want to get fully involved. There's only a certain amount of people who want to get fully involved, but you should take the time to thank the people who do get fully involved if you're one of the people who turns up on a Saturday and finds all the boundary markers already out and the crease markings done, and you can stroll up with your cricket bat and start smacking it all over the place. Well, somebody somewhere is working in the background all the time to do that, and they're probably doing it for free. So speaking of World Cup related things, Berners, I wanted to have a little chat about a lesson possibly that club sides could learn from England in the World Cup, and that is play badly but still make it through to the quarterfinals of a competition. What's been your view of the English performance in the group stages and managing to scrape through into the final eight?
Well, exactly that. They've done what's required, really, haven't they? So they needed to make the last eight. That's a bit of a lottery. It's the big game players who will come into play. So I think England will be quite happy, actually. They've they've not played well, but hopefully, you know, competitions like this, normally a bit of momentum that you carry through can often, you know, see you home. If a couple of your players have failed or whatever, it could be a big time for Morgan to step up. They're in the hat, so to speak. It's a typical Germans approach, isn't it? Last minute, it's been 0-0, diabolical game, corner comes in and the Germans will nick it. A bit like Manchester United at the moment. But the main thing is, people say, is it luck or is it, you know, is it actual skill? Well, it's probably a bit of a mixture of both, isn't it? At the end of the day, if you keep playing till the final whistle, things will happen and they make opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, everybody plays badly from time to time. Sometimes teams play badly from time to time. It's having the two things, really. It's having the spirit to keep going when you are playing badly, to think, you know, can we nick the cricket equivalent of a last-minute goal from a last-minute corner, which is what England did against the West Indies, pretty much. If you think you can keep going, you can keep fighting, then that's really what people mean when they say spirit. It means not giving up and still going, and any team can do that. And the other thing which I think this England team are really good at, which club sides can learn from, is that they move on very quickly from their mistakes. They don't let them get to them. They don't really mind if somebody plays poorly in one game, because they know that overall they're a good player, and they'll go into the next game not carrying over the mistakes of the previous game, but looking forward and being positive and thinking that they're capable of beating anyone in the world, as they did in the World 2020, and of course, as well as they played in the Ashes.
Oh yeah, definitely. They'd all back themselves as individual players. I mean, they're professionals, so I don't think they would fear their ability, and that's probably what the camp keeps on reminding them about, and their own personal achievements and how they can take the world's best to the sword at any time potentially. So yeah, it should be interesting. I think if you're a brave man and you had a bob or two, you'd stick £10 on England the way things have been going.
There's a book, isn't there? I can't remember who wrote it, but it's a book about tennis called Winning Ugly, isn't there? Where it's not about how you look when you win, but it's about getting the win in whatever way that you do it. And if that's a scrappy performance that just gets you over the line, well, who cares? You're still over the line.
Exactly. Get the job done. Always the saying in cricket, look in the book. What does it say? It doesn't say how many catches we dropped. It doesn't say how many times we should have got someone out LBW. It says the result. We won, they lost, and that's history.
Now on the show, we've got a brand new feature. Coming up for the UK summer, we've adopted a cricket club to track what they're doing and find out how they deal with the challenges of being a modern amateur cricket club and all the ups and downs that go with that. And the side that we selected after a long selection process was Watsonians Cricket Club in Edinburgh. And the president of Watsonians, Ross Brooks, joins me on the line now. How's it going, Ross?
Very good, David. Yes, thanks for that introduction, and well, thanks to Pitch Vision for the opportunity to be followed throughout the season.
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting case study for people who are listening and people who keep up with the website to compare what you do, the things that you do, with the things that they do in their own clubs, because there's no real right or wrong way to do these things. There's just, there's different opinions. So we'll see how you do things, and we'll look at it from all different perspectives, coaching and playing and how the club is run and all the different sides of that. So maybe we could start with just a sort of little introduction to the club and sort of welcome anyone who's not familiar with Watsonians to the club. So what's it like being a player or an official at the club?
It's very interesting and very busy, especially sort of juggling a normal working life with being the president of the club. In terms of history, you know, Watsonians was formed in 1875, so the club goes back obviously a number of years, and is formerly one that was linked, if you like, to a one of the private schools in Edinburgh, George Watson's College. So we still sort of retain that link, but not as a former pupils club as we once were.
And you play in the Scottish National League. That's a 50-over format league, right?
It is, yeah. So we run three senior sides, of which our first 11 plays in the National League, which is now a two-tier league of Premiership and Championship, with our second and third 11s playing in the East of Scotland regional divisions, which is another 10 divisions that sort of sit below that, just within the East of Scotland region. So our first 11 sit in the Premiership and finish second, which is our highest ever finish in that top tier last year. So it's a fairly competitive league. So most sides have a professional player within that Premiership structure. And also there's most of the Scotland internationals also play within that league as well. So it's a very competitive league right at the top there.
And you came second last year. The obvious ambition for the coming summer is to go one better.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's what all the club is striving to achieve. I think as a club, we have a vision, not just to win silverware, but to be, you know, the top performing club in the country. So across the board from first 11 right down to our sort of junior section as well. So, but winning trophies comes with that sort of ambition of being the top club.
And what is the atmosphere like at the club? If you, if someone was to walk in, complete stranger, how would they, what would they take as the atmosphere to be like?
I think we're a very close bunch, and we've had to work hard at that over the last few years, really, to make things close, you know, across all the senior squads, and also sort of integrate the junior section into becoming much more part of the club. So everyone knows everyone now, which hasn't been the case, and certainly isn't the case in a lot of clubs that I've seen. So I think they just really get a sense that everyone's pulling in the same direction and enjoying their cricket at the same time.
The clubs run on an amateur basis. A lot of people who will be listening to this will be playing in clubs who have the same setup. So, what kind of challenges do you have running an ambitious club on an amateur basis like that?
I think there's a lot of challenges. You know, financially, you know, it's always a challenge. You know, to try and, you know, make sure we're getting the income in to support sort of our ambitions and continue to build on our sort of infrastructure and equipment. The challenges around volunteers supporting all areas of the club, mostly, I guess, the junior section, the volunteers to come out and spend hours and hours coaching with the kids. And really just trying to work at getting people committed to making the club a success. Financial constraints and time constraints are the biggest challenges that I face, you know, overseeing that whole part of the club.
Do you still play yourself?
I do, yes. I've been president now for, this is my third season as president, and I find myself being able to train less and less. So I formerly captained our second 11 and had a few cameos in the twos last year, but I'm probably dropping down towards the third 11 now, which suits me because it gives an opportunity for younger guys to come through and really sort of stake a claim. So even though I'm sort of just in my mid-30s and a fairly young president, I'm willing to step aside and let the kids have their moments in the light.
How much time would you say is taken up with your week with running a club as president?
I've done some sort of jotting down of how much time I actually spend, and I think I probably spend at least, you know, 20 hours a week, you know, just doing stuff, and whether that's sort of meeting up with people, having phone conversations about, you know, what we need to do, anything from, you know, just ordering kit up, making sure we've got, you know, all the things in place that we need to have in place to grow and improve as a club, so that if you ask my wife, she'll probably tell you it's a lot more than 20 hours spent.
It adds up and you don't even realise it. You just get involved.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know the feeling very well. Yeah. Being quite involved in my local club, I know exactly that feeling. You suddenly you've taken up half a day doing something.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess you're trying to juggle a full-time job at the same time, and even getting to a stage when you're using your holidays just because you need to do so much with the cricket club as well. So, but I enjoy it nonetheless, and I wouldn't do it if I didn't. So I find it extremely rewarding.
What would you say to someone who was passionate about cricket? They wanted to get more involved in their own club on some level, but they're a bit reluctant because they're not quite sure about what to do. What would you say to someone who was keen and wanted to get involved but didn't quite know what to do next?
I think just putting your hand up, really, and volunteering. I think, yeah, within any club you'll find there's, yeah, a small number of sort of key individuals who take on all the work, and I think, you know, it's looking for, you know, other individuals just to come forward and say, look, I want to do something, what can I do? Everyone, from my perspective, has a part to play in, you know, making a club successful, however big or however small, you know, the task that they take on. So I think it's really just putting your hand up and saying, you know, I want to be involved, and going from there. It doesn't have to be sort of formally sitting on committees. It could just be those small little tasks that save some of those key individuals so much of their own time.
Well, Ross, we look forward to following the club through the summer. We'll be getting regular updates from different people about your games and your training and things that are happening throughout the club as the summer goes on. So I think it's going to be an exciting and educational few months as we go on that journey together.
Absolutely, and I guess from our perspective, we're hoping to learn a few things too. So, if anyone's listening and reading the articles, then yeah, it will be good to hear how everyone else does things. You know, if I can learn out of this process, then and make our club stronger, make cricket better for the people that involved in it, then I'll certainly look to be taking some tips from some people.
It's time for the ever popular question section. And Berners, you have the questions there. Remember, you've got a chance to win a prize with a Pitch Vision Academy coaching course. So if your question comes up, you win some online coaching courtesy of pitchvision.com. So Berners, what questions have you got for us this week?
We've got quite an interesting question here about weight and power from Gerard Lee, who's asking about how much weight a fast bowler should have to enable them to bowl fast. He believes that a fast bowler should have hard, lean, muscular body types like javelin throwers, but he's comparing this to weightlifters and he's saying that they're a lot bigger so they can obviously lift a bit more. He's got a few technical terms in here. He's thinking that force is equals acceleration times mass, so that's a lot of acceleration and more mass, plus knowing technically how to fire the muscles in sequence in pace bowling. So he'd like to bowl a lot quicker, and he's just wondering if this is true.
So the question is, I think, if I put on weight, if I put on more muscle mass, will that, when combined with good bowling technique, will that make me a faster bowler? I think that's the question that he's asking there. You have two bowlers with exactly the same technique. One has more muscle mass than the other. Which one will bowl the fastest?
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's an interesting theoretical question. In terms of a strength and conditioning viewpoint, it's not really muscle mass that we're interested in so much. There is a certain amount to do with that, but it's the rate of force that you need to generate. And force isn't generated purely by muscle mass. It's as much about the neural adaptations, the way that you're used to moving is more important than just the sheer amount of muscle mass. Otherwise, Arnold Schwarzenegger would be the fastest bowler in the world, and he wasn't when he was in Predator. I'm sure he couldn't propel a ball at 90 miles an hour. So it doesn't.
I'll be back.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the more mass you have, the better. There's not a direct relationship like that. It's more of an indirect relationship. And the reason that it's an indirect relationship is that if you imagine bowling speed to be on a continuum between speed and strength. So if you imagine a line, and at one end of the line is pure strength. So those are the guys who are powerlifters, the ones who do the squats and the bench pressing and the deadlifts with ridiculously high weights. Those guys are utilizing almost purely strength. And then at the other end of the scale, you've got pure speed. And those are the sprinters. They're the guys who are not, they're not going against any resistance at all. They're just using their legs to propel their body as fast as possible over 100 meters or 200 meters, whatever it is. And then in between those two, there's variation. So you've got strength speed, which is more like Olympic lifting, which is, say, lifting a very heavy weight but very quickly. That's strength speed. And then you've got speed strength, which is making a small object move very quickly. Now, a cricket ball is a small object, so that's what we're really looking at. We're looking at speed strength, and that is a combination of more than just, you need to have strength and you need to have power, you need that ability at one end, but you also need to have speed. So it's a combination of those of everything put together to propel that ball in a certain direction. And this is taking technique out of the question altogether. So that's a long answer, really, to a question where really the answer is no, there isn't a direct relationship between strength and speed, between mass and speed. You do want a certain amount of muscle mass. You don't want to be a little tiny little beanpole. You want a certain amount of muscle mass, but there's a diminishing return. After you get to a certain point, the return becomes so small because so many other factors have become more important that you might as well not bother. And that point will vary depending on how big a person you are. You know, if you're like Chris Tremier, you're 6'8", then you're naturally going to have more muscle mass just because you're taller, you're bigger, you need more muscles to cover your bones than if you're Darren Goff, fast bowler, whatever he was, 5'9", 5'10", whatever he was. So that number is going to vary, but the key thing is, are you athletic? Can you move fast? Are you mobile? Have you got plenty of strength? You know, can you lift plenty of weight in the gym? If you can say yes to all of those things, if you're athletic, then that's got the fitness side of it covered. What's the next question, Bernard?
Got a question here from Brad Hodgkins. He struggles with footwork. When he drives through cover, for example, he just tends to place his front foot straight down the wicket. When he tries to play off the back foot, play the pull shot, he often gets cramped, especially with lefties bowling. Saying his back foot doesn't go back and across enough. He just goes backwards. He kind of understands his problems and he's just wondering where to go.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing wrong, but he doesn't know how to fix it, the problem that he had. And this is where a good coach comes in and uses a corrective drill. This is a perfect example of using a corrective drill to sort out a problem. So in this case, what have we got? We've got two things. We've got a front foot drive that he's not getting in the right position, and two back foot shots. He's or a pull shot or any back foot shot. He's not getting his foot in the right position.
You don't want him on Dancing on Ice.
Definitely not. No. He's no Mark Rambrakash, is he? So the way to get yourself into that correct position is to move before the ball has been bowled or fed. You need a feed. So you can do this with a tennis ball. You can do this on the front foot. You can do it with a drop feed. On the back foot, you can do it with a bobble feed. You want to get yourself into the position that you should be getting in rather than the position that you are getting in. So with a front foot drive, you are moving. You're stepping forward and you're getting into the position with your head is where your foot is in the right place and your head is over your front foot. But you've got your bat in the back lift, so you've made the initial movement towards the ball, and then in the back foot it's the same again, except you step back and across to get in position. Then you get ready to receive the ball. Then the feeder just feeds you that ball, a nice soft, gentle, easy feed, and then all you need to do from that position is play the shot. So you don't have to think about moving and then playing the shot. All you have to think about doing is playing the shot from the finished position, or sometimes they call it the set position. And you can do that with a gentle tennis ball feed. You can do it with a slow feed on a bowling machine, however you want to do, whatever resources you've got access to, you can use there. It's something that Gary Palmer talks a lot about in his guide to batting on front and back foot shots in Pitch Vision Academy, pitchvision.com/academy, if you want to look at the videos of that. But yeah, the key is to get into the set position, play from that shot there until you're comfortable playing the shot from the set position, and then once you're comfortable playing the shot in the set position, go back into your normal stance and then try playing the shot again with an easy feed from your normal stance, and you then know what your stance feels like, you know this what the finished position feels like. So all you need to do is move between how those two positions feel. Most people get it. If you don't get it then, and some people don't get it, it's fine. Some people take a little bit longer to learn, get the kinesthetic awareness. If you don't learn it that straight away, go back to going in the set position and try again and really get that feel for hitting the ball from that set position or that finished position. And then go back to your stance again. And just keep working on that, keep doing that, until you get it right. It can be hard work, especially if you're a slow learner kinesthetically. Some people, it takes a few goes to get right, a few sessions to get right. You may be working on it for 3-4 hours, possibly, until you get into the right position. And even when you've got it right, you might go back into bad habits again when you go out into the middle. So you might have to go back to it again after your game and think to yourself, right, did I do it right this time? It's a constant process of adaptation. But once it's locked into that memory, you'll do the same thing every time. It's the same as learning to ride a bike. When you learn to ride a bike, it takes you a while to get the hang of balancing on it. But once you can do it, you can do it forevermore. Nobody needs to learn to ride a bike a second time. And it's just the same as learning to play an off drive or an on drive or a back foot drive or a pull shot. Once you've learned the right body position, you never have to think about it again. You can just get on the bike and ride away. In this next portion of the show, we're going to be talking to Gary Palmer. Gary's CCM Academy is world renowned for producing high quality cricketers with excellent techniques. And Gary is also the batting coach of Pitch Vision Academy, our online coaching academy. Do these principles, these ABC principles, change when we're talking about back foot drives?
No, I think they're exactly the same. I think you could talk about the ABCs for bowling, and it's exactly the same. And probably all sports, you've got to be aligned, you've got to be balanced, and you've got to have a good completion. Same with bowling, isn't it? You've got to be aligned and balanced at the crease, and you've got to have a good completion of your action and follow through. I think they're key. And for me, it just makes it really simple. Three basic things to be monitoring. And if the coach knows his stuff on technique, he or she can then just fine-tune within each of those three key areas. But when you're coaching somebody, you've got to look for near-on perfection of those three things. And if people are doing things wrong, you need to try and nip it in the bud straight away. Because when you talk about muscle memory, it's no good you saying to a player, work it out for yourself. Because if they have 300 hits doing it all wrong and still don't work it out, that's 300 hits going into the muscle memory, 300 body positions that aren't quite right, which is confusing the batter's mindset on what they're supposed to do. So if you see two shots that aren't quite right, step in straight away, make the correction, and then you're getting all the good feelings of the correct shapes going to the muscle memory, in which case the player logs it quicker, becomes second nature quicker. You can't allow people to... if I was coaching someone in the net and I see them doing something wrong, I need to identify what it is, think of the change that I need to do so that player has a good outcome, i.e. performs a shot much better. And if I can't get that sorted within three balls, I've got to get a little bit annoyed with myself. You know, the whole object of coaching someone is to go in the net, and if you're with them an hour, when they leave that net, they need to be a better player than when they came into it. That's what I try to achieve as a coach, and I think that's what a player should also try to achieve. They've got to make sure they've improved by the time they've come out of their session. It's no good just going through the motions. And look, the other thing is, you hear a lot of people say, do what's comfortable. You know, if you're doing something that feels comfortable and the outcome's inconsistent, then it's not obviously not right. The most important for me is the outcome of the shot, you know, the outcome, the performance outcome. Even if it doesn't feel right, you've made a change, it may not feel right because it's something you're not used to doing. But if you're still hitting the ball nice and straight and the outcome's good, that's the most important thing, and you need to stick with it. And the more you do it, the more it will become second nature, and then you'll just really kick on as a player.
That wraps up the show for this week. Before we go, Berners, you've got to decide who's going to win the free online coaching with Pitch Vision Academy from pitchvision.com. So which question did you prefer the most this week?
I think purely on the basis that Gerard Lee has also informed us that he's got an Iranian weightlifting coach. It's got to be him.
Yeah, I didn't understand why the nationality was in there, but it was good to know. So well done, Gerard. Yeah, we'll get you your online coaching course from Pitch Academy. Don't forget, if you want your chance to win a prize, you can email in or phone us with a question, and if it's a good question, we'll put you on the show and we'll answer the question, and on top of that we'll give you the free coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy. So Berners, what's the contact details for getting in touch with us?
And drop us an email at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com or give us a quick call on 020-88-167-691.
Berners and I will be watching the England quarter-final with bated breath. This England World Cup performance isn't doing much good for my nails, Berners, but it's certainly keeping things interesting, isn't it?
I'm on the England all the way. Come on, you boys.
England all the way to the final. We'll find out. Maybe by the time you listen to this, you already know the answer to that question, and we'll look like fools. But we're backing England all the way here on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. So until next week, when England may well have embarrassed us all, we'll see you next time.